Good evening and welcome to Bird Calls, the first program in a new quarterly series here on Red River Radio. Tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our feathered friends on the avian world or in the avian world at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he is ready to answer your questions tonight about birds. Cliff is currently the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he has had since 1997, and he's been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years. He is also the author of the book Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M University Press, and he has authored over 60 publications on birds and birding. He and his wife, Julie, and their two children live in East Texas, and Cliff, welcome to the show tonight.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
And we hope we do get lots of calls, and by the way, if you want to and you have a photograph of a bird that you would like to go ahead and have identified, you can send that photograph in to us tonight. You need to send it to R. Moran, that's R-M-O-R-A-N, at lsus.edu, and they will shuttle that in to us, and then we'll go ahead and see if we can get Cliff to go ahead and identify that bird for you. But right now we're also taking your calls at 800-552-8502. And I think off the bat, I was curious, do your wife and children also share your love of birds and the outdoors?
They're kind of forced to. So and it's addicting, and our kids really pick it up from us. And my son, he's almost nine, he can identify several bird songs in our backyard. And whenever the resident barred owl comes to our backyard, they all love to jump to the window and see it. So, we're all a family of four bird watchers, so it's fun.
All right. And I guess one of the questions that I have to start off with is, what is the difference between bird call and bird song, specifically to let the and how do you identify the difference between the two?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer. It's mostly a matter of context, and a bird song is usually more complex. It's usually seasonal, and it's used very differently than a bird call that's a lot more simple. It typically used year-round. So like a bird call would be something like a paralocation call or an alarm call, something we'd hear like a chip note, versus a song. I think everybody's familiar with a song. And with a song, a bird is, it's typically the male. He's displaying that he's the owner of this territory. He's maintaining that with bird song. We put up fences to tell people that this is our tract of land. Well, bird song is used similar in that regard.
You are listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford, and he is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he works for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. He's a professional ornithologist, and we have our first caller on the line, Jeff from Bossier City. You are on Bird Calls. What's your question tonight?
Hello. I have had swallows nesting in my front porch the past few years, and this year they showed up, but they have not been nesting yet. And I wonder if I'm more likely to get the swallows to stay around if I clean out the nest every year or if I leave it.
Well, I'm guessing you're talking about barn swallows, what locals call mud swallows, because they make the nest out of mud. It's about 100% made out of mud. And they're good neighbors to have. They're eating a lot of the pesky insects that we don't like in our yard, flies and things. So you want to keep them there. Well, those nests typically crumble and dry out and fall apart. And so what they typically will do is use that same point where they build the nest and rebuild the next year. So I don't think you want to do any cleaning out of the mud nest, because typically it'll fall down. There might be a little bit of it left, but that's important for the birds the next year for pair bonding to go ahead and fix up and renovate what may have been used last year. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Good.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls here on Red River Radio, and our next caller is online. This is Benny. Benny, where are you calling from?
He's in Field, Texas.
All right. Say that again. I didn't have your line up.
Elysian Fields, Texas.
All right. And what's your question tonight for Cliff?
Yeah, Cliff, I work in the oil field, and I've been spending a lot of time in the Laredo region. And there's a bird down there that looks to me like a small version of an American eagle, but it acts like a scavenger. It's almost like their version of a buzzard. And I can't find anybody that can tell me the name of it, and I was wondering if you could.
Yes, that is the crested caracara. And you nailed it with what you say. Looks a lot like an eagle, but he does scavenge. They'll be on the roadside looking for roadkill. They'll sometimes feed with vultures. But the correct common name is crested caracara. And if you Google that or look in your bird book, you'll find information about it. They're actually related to falcons, but they're not fast. They don't hunt like falcons. Instead, they're kind of slow goers and look for easy handouts, like scavenging for roadkill. They've got big white wing patches. They've got white in the head, and actually they're kind of expanding into this area. We get a few sightings every year now, and it's a bird that is expanding north and east, and it's something that you might be able to see even in Elysian Fields. You're near DeBerry.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Yeah, I just drove through there a little while ago. That's something to look for. Even in Elysian Fields, it might show up one day. They really like chicken farms, especially before restrictions on or regulations on what you could do with the dead chickens after a harvest of a coop. You would see in South Texas lots of caracaras waiting for the free food handout. So, yeah, crested caracara is my final answer.
They act pretty bold. I mean, you can get within 6 or 10 feet of them before they scare and fly off. Is that characteristic as well?
Yeah. Is it maybe because they got a full belly, or they're sitting on food and hoping you just keep moving along? Because a lot of times if you're in a car, you can approach a lot of birds in a car like a moving blind a lot better than if you're walking. So the minute you get out of a car, if you drive up to a wetland, ducks typically sit still, but the moment you get out of the car, poof, there they go. So is that what you're seeing? Are you driving up to the bird 6 or 7 feet away?
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both?
Yes, sir. I do a little bit of walking around, and yeah. They don't seem to be startled very easily.
Yeah, they're pretty bold birds, and they're pretty neat looking, and they usually hang out in twos and threes, and bald eagles. Some the locals call them Mexican eagles, so if you asked around Laredo to the old-timers, they probably would have said, oh, yeah, that's a Mexican eagle, and that's a colloquial name. It's not the correct name, so crested caracara is what you want to look up.
Well, great. Hey, I appreciate your time. Thanks for your show, and NPR rocks.
Hey, great.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, you are listening to Bird Calls here on Red River Radio, and our lines are open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. If you have a photo of a bird that you would like Click to try to identify, please send that to R. Moran, R-M-O-R-A-N, at lsus.edu, at lsus.edu. They'll shuttle that photo into us, and we'll try to see if we can get Cliff to go ahead and identify that.
And that's been a very useful thing in my field, is the digital photography revolution, because it sure makes my job easier when people send in a photograph. So a verbal description, if you want to call in and describe a bird, it's just really tough. You know, it's like asking me, who's that actor with the brown hair, and he's in a lot of movies, and he's married to someone famous, and Brad Pitt, no, not him, Tom Cruise, no, Ethan Hawke, no, and, you know, just go down the list. So I prefer photos. It would be great if people sent in photos, if they want something ID'd, and we get that a lot at Parks and Wildlife. People have weird birds, or birds they're not familiar with at their feeder, and you can get the camera really close, so send those kind of pictures in, and we can try to tackle it.
All right, we have an unidentified caller, and we're just going to go ahead and take that. Could you give us your name and tell us where you're from, and then what your question is?
Hey, this is Troy from Carthage, Texas.
Hey, Troy, how are you? What's your question tonight for Cliff?
Well, I flipping through the channel, and I heard this for the bird show, and I said, I've got to ask a question. I am wondering what a rain crow is. Some of the old timers I'm used to know would talk about a rain crow.
Yes. Yeah, rain crow is a great colloquial name for the yellow-billed cuckoo. And the name kind of came out by during rainstorms, that bird will sing. Most birds get really quiet during a rainstorm, but that bird will continue to sing. But what happened is people called that a rain crow as a, if they heard one sing, they were predicting that it was going to rain. Like if you hear rain crow, you better get your umbrella. It didn't work that way. So I think the original name came from the bird actively singing during a rain shower, and that's where he gets that name. But the correct name is yellow-billed cuckoo, and they are here in the breeding season. They start arriving in April, and they'll leave us in the fall. And for a migrant, this is a migratory bird, they have quite a long trek. The yellow-billed cuckoo winters in South America, so they go a heck of a long way. So Peru.
Well, what do they sound like?
Well, I have a tape player here. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that, but it's kind of a go 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 go, go. And it's kind of a
cool, like a crescendo, kind of pitches up and then comes back down. Or?
Yeah, and it's just they're commonly singing right now. They're very fond of eating hairy caterpillars, so those bagworms, that is your best bird to kind of combat a problem with hairy caterpillars, those bagworms. That's what those guys like to eat, and so they're a good neighbor to have, the yellow-billed cuckoo.
I know my old uncle, he hated them because they would eat his catawba worms while they were coming down the tree, and he wanted to kill everyone he could.
Oh, yeah.
He never could eat
yeah,
them.
So he wanted them for fishing bait, didn't he? The catawba worm. So, yeah.
All right. I want to thank you for your call, Troy, and we're going to move on now. We have Ben in Dry Prong. Ben, go ahead. You're on the air. What's your question for Cliff tonight on Bird Calls?
Good afternoon.
Yes.
I've got a roadrunner that passes across the back of the property behind the shop, and he's been taking some birds off the wife's bird feeder. It's neat to watch. And I was wondering what I can do to encourage him to stay around.
Did you say roadrunner?
Yes.
Okay. I think if you keep feeding the birds and they come to the bird feeder, that sounds like that's the way to keep the roadrunner there. Although there are a lot of people that don't like that. That's one of the big predators at hummingbird feeders is the smart, crafty roadrunner that figures out how to sit on the edge of the roof and wait for the hummingbirds to come in, and they just nab them out of the midair. So they've got to eat too, but the good thing about roadrunners, they're eating a lot of snakes. They eat a lot of lizards, but a lot of locals like having roadrunners because they will eat venomous snakes on occasion. So, and that's a neat bird because in our listening area, that is not a bird that would have been here 150 years ago. Because we've opened up the landscape, we've encouraged that bird to move from more western open habitats into our listening area. So he's kind of a recent addition to the Piney Woods.
What I thought was neat about the way he gets in birds is he'll line up behind a tree and go toward that tree so that he's behind, so the birds can't see him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets to that tree, he'll move sideways to another tree and work his way up to the feeder.
That's pretty neat. And they'll look at they'll see their reflection in your window and they'll attack it. A lot of birds do that. What they're not looking through the glass, they're looking at their reflection of the glass. And to that roadrunner, he sees another male, and boy, he gets upset because that's his turf and he doesn't want another male nearby. So we get a lot of calls about roadrunners banging on windows, and people think, well, he's trying to come in to get some baloney. No, that's baloney. He's actually seeing his reflection. So what we recommend people doing that don't like that is just to tape up some newspaper at his level so he can't see that reflection. But that's neat that you've got him. He's not just eating your songbirds. He's probably eating a lot of lizards, large insects. He's a predator, and they're pretty fun. I'm glad you're enjoying watching him. That would be pretty neat to see him. So is he pretty stealthful? Is he crafty?
Oh, yeah. He gets up right to the feed. The feeder's right off the tree.
Uh-huh.
He'll get right behind the, after he works up and gets right behind the tree, he'll stick his head out, and it looks like he just freezes there for a couple of minutes. And one evening I was watching him, he caught one bird in his mouth and pinned another one to the ground with his foot.
Wow.
Killed the one in his mauth and then killed the one on the ground, ate one and hauled the other one off.
Now, if you could get that on video, that would go viral. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's neat to
watch. What size of a bird is he going after?
I'm sorry, sir. I don't know what they're called. They're the little green-colored small bird. I haven't seen them lately.
Okay. No, that's fine. I'm just curious how big he'll go. Well, that's pretty neat. But, yeah, roadrunners are here to stay. We've encouraged them to move this way, and actually they've crossed the Mississippi River in the last few decades, which is not something they did by flight. They probably ran over one of the many bridges, and they're moving eastward because, again, we're opening up the landscape. They're not a forest bird, so they would not have occurred here pre-settlement.
Because they were typically in the southwest, were they not?
They're in the southwest, yeah. You know, you think of them with kind of dry cactus country or thorn scrub, like the previous caller that talked about Laredo. That's where you would expect to see roadrunners, yeah.
What are some of the most common birds? If somebody's just sitting out in their backyard and they're going to hear numerous kinds of calls, what are some of the most common birds they're likely to be listening to in this area?
And that would probably change on a month-to-month or at least season-to-season basis. Right now, there are a lot of things singing, a lot of things that you won't even see even if you look really hard. Things like red-eyed vireo and northern perula, they're up in the tallest trees singing away. And you don't really need to see them to know that they're there. You know what they sound like, and you can identify them that way. But right now, there are a lot of cardinals and Carolina wrens and blue jays singing. You know, I go through town a lot in Nacogdoches where I live, and I hear a lot of special birds that are seasonal, like great crested flycatchers, summer tanagers. These are birds that are not going to be with us year-round.
And this is an example of a Carolina wren for those of you who might be wondering what that bird sounds like. Now you hear that bird squawking in the background. I was kind of curious as to what that was.
Yeah, there's a blue jay in the background. And the neat thing is that's the Carolina wren that most of us have as a backyard bird. They're real small, and boy, do they have some volume. For a little bird, they can really belt it out. And it's around the house, and it's a wren, and a lot of people call them incorrectly house wrens because it's a wren, it's near the house. That's how you name birds, but that's not correct. This is the Carolina wren, has a bold white eye line, real buffy underneath and kind of rusty brown above, and then the sound that we just heard. And in the spring and summer, he's the one that's probably waking you up before your alarm clock, especially in the spring when you got your windows open, it's nice and cool. They are very loud.
And very early risers.
And very early risers.
Well, you are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist, and he is the state non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. He's here from the Nacogdoches area, and we're encouraging you to call in right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And if you have a photo of a bird and you would like us to try to identify that, you can email that photo to rmoran@lsus.edu. They'll shuttle that photograph into us and we'll try to identify that for you. We did have a caller called in. They didn't want to go on the air, but they wanted to know about any recent updates on the hunt for the ivory-billed woodpecker, which I remember some fascinating stories on NPR about two, three years ago about that.
That went public in, it was April of 05, I believe, and it was hot news then. It has really fizzled. So the caller wanted to know about recent. There's really nothing. Everybody's pretty much back to where we were before. Nothing new. So, yeah, and that's not something I would expect. And if anybody thinks they've got an ivory billed, take a picture, because there are lots of other woodpeckers. And namely, there's another big woodpecker that's common, that's crested, that's black and white and red like an ivory billed, and that's the pileated woodpecker. So most of the calls we get, most of the photographs we get, 100% are pileated. So if you think you have the ivory billed, you better take a photograph before you call anybody, because you're going to be met with great skepticism.
And that's because it is an extremely rare bird in this area, is it not?
Well, and in Texas, the last verified record was over 90 years ago. So it's just not expected. In Louisiana, you know, there, you look at some of the most interesting writing on that species, that was done in the mid to late 30s. in the Monroe area in the Tensaw River bottom. So it's just not a bird we're going to see.
Was that at one time very common in this area? Was it a product of the advancement of civilization that drove it into near extinction, what was it that caused that problem?
It was definitely a bird of this listening area. It was a bird of the South. It was a bird of the bottoms, the river bottoms. It would occasionally move into upland pine settings. The key with that bird, it needs big chunks of real estate. And we're talking 10,000 acres per pair minimum is the estimate. So you need big chunks of real estate of mature wood, mature trees with a lot of dead and dying trees. That's the niche that bird filled. It was really focused on dead and dying timber, dead from fire, from flooding, from maybe beetle outbreaks. Those birds would move in and mine, like a gold miner would mine those beetles that are in those dead and dying trees. And that's another thing with woodpeckers. A lot of people think woodpeckers are killing the trees. The tree is already stressed, dead or dying, and the beetles are attracting the woodpecker. So the woodpecker is chiseling for foraging because there are already beetles in there, or the wood's already dead, and most woodpeckers are going to be building cavities in dead wood.
And so really that is not destroying necessarily the tree. They're finding a part of the tree that is open
that's
to
right.
that, that's already dead
that's
enough
right.
that that they can bore into
yes.
it a little more easily.
Yeah, so the woodpecker does not kill the tree.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we have a photo, but first we have a caller, and we don't have your name or where you're from, so please tell us where you're from and what your name is, and go ahead and ask your question. Hello, caller? Hello, caller? If you can hear me, go ahead and ask your question, please.
Nobody there.
Okay, we're going to go on. Yeah, you're on the line.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, I had an issue with some crows, and I have a second home in East Texas, and I have a nice front porch around the front of the house, and they crows went in there and pecked out all my screens. And I think they see themselves in the window, but I was wanting to know what we could do to get rid of that.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, you could maybe tape up some newspaper. I know that won't be very, that's pretty unsightly, but it sounds like you've got some very bored crows out there. They need to have something else more stimulating than vandalizing your cabin or your house out there. But no, that's probably, you probably nailed it, that they're seeing their reflection and they're going after it. And that's sometimes very seasonal for birds, so I'm not sure you're gonna see that year round. But I would try to break that reflection somehow, or eliminate that reflection, and that would probably eliminate that problem.
You are listening to Bird Calls here on Red River Radio. We have Pat in the holding pattern right now, but first we're going to get to this photograph that was sent in. Can you tell us what you're seeing there for this person?
Yes, somebody sent in a photo of, it's a great photo, by the way, of a young bird that has fallen out of the nest a little early, and because it's on the ground, I can see it, and he's not supposed to be, and it's a young yellow-crowned night heron, and he's related to herons and egrets, and they nest here in the listening area. And this guy obviously fell out of a nest a little too soon, so he's not able to fly yet. So, and that's one thing to keep in mind, that some birds do on purpose leave the nest early, and you don't want to grab them and call somebody, you know, like a vet or a zoo or something nearby. You want to leave that bird alone. Like blue jay is notorious for jumping the nest a little early. So the thing to do is grab the pets and the kids and get them inside and let the baby bird do their thing. So some birds do fledge what we think is a little too early, and we think, oh, they're orphaned. Well, they're not really orphaned. If you look up, mom and dad are just fine right above taking care of the baby bird, but the dog or the cat or both is a bit of an issue.
Right. You are listening to Bird Calls tonight here on Red River Radio. The number to call, 800-552-8502. We have Pat from Lufkin on the line. Pat, you are on the air. What's your question tonight for Cliff?
I live in Lufkin, and I'm about 15 miles from Lake Sam Rayburn, and the there's American bald eagles that nest on the lake and some of those dead trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so cool the other day. I watched a bald eagle snatch a fish out of the water. I'd seen it lots on TV. I'd never seen one in real life. I thought that was so cool.
That's neat. Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I thought that was just wonderful. But as that family of bald eagles gets bigger and bigger, are they going to be competing for, you know, the same fish and game and hunting grounds as they get bigger? Are they limited on how big they can get? Is what I'm asking.
You're talking about big as far as the population goes.
Yes, the population of bald eagles.
Yeah, and they have exploded, and that's a good thing over the last 30, 40 years. I think the figure in 1970. Two-ish was that we had less than 10 breeding pairs across Texas, and now in Texas we have over 250 breeding pairs. So I think we have a lot more wiggle room. Sam Rayburn's a big old lake, and you could have a lot of pairs working Sam Rayburn. So I don't think in your lifetime or mine we're going to see an issue with them. They are on the increase. They're in lakes that are close to big urban centers. We get a lot of calls from the Houston area. People, you know, really excited to see a bald eagle on Lake Conroe or Lake Houston, and they are definitely moving back into areas that they once inhabited. So we can thank removal of DDT for the increase in bald eagles, and also brown pelican, the state bird here in Louisiana.
All right, you are listening to Bird Calls here on Red River Radio. The number to call, 800-552-8502. We have George, Marty, and Lorraine in line. Marty and Lorraine, please hang on. We're going to go to George next, and then we'll get to you right after that. George, you are from Minden, and you're on the air with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Yes, I'm between Minden and Dubberly, and I have been watching birds in my bird feeder for now about 10 years, and I got a field guide years ago, and I'm really interested in correctly identifying the birds I see. So sometimes it takes me months before I can correctly identify them. But there's two birds that I have only had visited my feeder a couple of times, and it's been like now 4 or 5 years, and one of them is a rose-breasted grosbeak.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is a painted bunny.
Oh, great.
And so I'm just wondering, those birds were so phenomenal, the colors of them, and I was just amazed when I saw them.
Yes.
And waited till they visited. They were like at my feeders, like both of them, like about 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen them again. How rare or how common are those birds in this area?
Those are not rare at all. The grosbeak does not breed in this area. He's probably stopping off at your feeder like you would a gas station to refuel. So he's not going to breed until he gets to the Great Lakes states, for example. So there are no breeding records of rose-breasted grosbeak in this listening area. They're only halfway home. The painted bunting, though, they do nest in this area, and you don't have to drive out in the country very far to see one. I see them inside the loop of Nacogdoches in scrubby areas where there's a lot of trees and things regenerating, so a lot of short-statured trees mixed with grass and weeds and forbs and things like that, and you can see painted bunting. So what you probably saw, though, I'm guessing you had both of those in the month of April or May, and they saw your feeder as that gas station stop on a long journey. So that painted bunting maybe stayed local, or he kept going. They breed far to our north as well. But of those, the painted bunting is a local nester, and the rose-breasted grosbeak is just a migrant in spring and fall.
So a bird feeder can actually act as a really nice rest stop for migrating birds
sure
passing
can.
Through the area.
Yeah, and what a treat. If that was a male rose-breasted grosbeak, that is a beautiful bird. He's all black and white with this bleeding heart, red chest, and it's just stunning.
Yeah.
Beauty. And the painted bunting is just off the charts gorgeous. He looks like someone took a lot of different colors and painted it on there, and he's just all reds and purples and greens and just beautiful.
I have to admit, I'd never actually heard of that bird, so
yeah.
An interesting fact. Well, give us a call right now with your questions about anything having to deal with birds and ornithology at 800-552-8502. If you have a photo of a bird and you'd like Cliff to go ahead and try to identify that, you can email that photo to rmoran@lsus.edu. That's rmoran@lsus.edu. We've got Marty and Lorraine up next. Marty, you're from Shreveport. What's your question tonight?
Yeah, I have a question. I saw a sharp-shinned hawk in a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I do a little drawing, and I drew the bird, and I was wondering if that particular hawk is in this area, or where is its range at?
Yeah, the sharp-shinned hawk is in this listening area, and we have most of them showing up in the fall and spending the winter with us. And you can see them in the spring, but they really thin out in the breeding season. There are very few breeding records of that bird in this listening area, and they're going to be pretty well tied to open longleaf forests, like on the Kissatchee National Forest, the Vernon District, or the Angelina National Forest in East Texas. So they're really hard to find as a breeding bird, but you probably saw that bird, I would guess, September, October through April, May is usually when we get our sharp shins.
Give us a call right now with your questions about birds or anything having to do with ornithology. 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. The program is Bird Calls, and our resident expert tonight is Clifford Shackelford, and he is the non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and he is also an author of Hummingbirds of Texas, and he's the author of many papers on birds and birding. We have Lorraine from Wynn Parish who is online right now. Lorraine, what is your question tonight for Cliff?
Well, I'd like to comment on the rose-breasted grosbeak. Several of us around here were lucky enough to have them this spring, and they, as you say, are very, very beautiful little birds. But my question is about the pine siskins. We just had, I guess, 100 of those little suckers with us during the winter. They ate us out of thistles every other day, so I'm wondering if you have any idea about why. Usually we get 2 or 3, maybe 4 or 5. During the whole winter,
right?
Why did we have so many of them this year?
There are several species that are seed eaters that have what we call eruptive migrations or eruptive movements. And this year in my area as well, we had an explosion of pine siskins, and they lingered for a long time. If you learn the buzzy call of the pine siskin, you'll find that somewhere around where the trees start leafing out in April, those birds leave the feeder and go right up to those new shoots 80 feet up and start chomping away. And so we had in my yard pine siskins like you in huge numbers, and they stayed well into April. I can't remember the late date we had. So this was what we call an eruptive year. So it's a cyclical thing. There's no real pattern except for when food crop of seeds to our north are depleted or diminished or lacking, and those birds will move here. It might be another 5 years till we see that. It might be next year. And there are several other birds that do that as well. The red-breasted nuthatch goes through that same kind of eruptive phase. Purple finch is another one. So the thing they all have in common is they're typically seed eaters, typically pine cone seed eaters, and they'll move into our area in big numbers when there's not enough food to the north. But yeah, I really like those pine siskins.
All right, you are listening to Bird Calls tonight from Red River Radio. Cliff Shackelford is our resident expert. You can call us right now at 800-552-8502 with your questions about birds, birding, ornithology. And you have a photo there. Another question?
Identification? I wanted to make a comment. I thought it was interesting that we went 30 minutes before the first female caller came through.
Right,
did you notice that?
Yeah.
It was male dominated. I mean, that's good, I guess. So I hope some ladies decide to call in this last 30-minute segment. But we do have a photo from Randall. He's asking, what kind of duck is this? And he sent in a great photograph of a pair of black-bellied whistling ducks. And this is a bird that is been expanding in our area in the last several decades, and it's of course going to come to a pond or any other sort of wetland, but they don't stick around here year round. They're kind of here and then gone. If you go to the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, and like the Harlingen area, they're there every day year round. People feed them corn. There's lots of ponds in the city limits. You know, business parks, neighborhood ponds, or sakas, etc. But this bird is definitely moving northward, and I think the main reason is with the wood duck box increase. So a lot of Boy Scouts putting up wood duck boxes, a lot of landowners trying to encourage wood ducks. This is a duck that also uses a cavity. So that duck box might be very important to the expansion of this bird. So the answer is black-bellied whistling duck. Great photo.
All right. And we have three callers standing in the hold here. We've got John, Paul, and Dave. Please stay on the line. We'll get with you in a moment. We're going to go to John now from Arkansas. John, you're on the line with Cliff Shackelford. What's your question tonight?
Yes. John Lucas, CrossFit Arkansas, you know, way up here in your listening area. And my dad and I tend to, you know, backyard bird watch all the time, and we see the typical cardinals, sparrows, everything. The other day we saw, for the first time for me, second time for him, an indigo bunting. And I'm just wondering how, I guess, rare those are, or is there a migratory pattern that they're following that would be a reason why this is my first time seeing them despite 3 years in this area?
Yeah, they will sometimes come to millet feed or sunflower seed. I see them at my feeder more in the spring during migration, but they are here to breed. So that bird starts arriving late March, early April in our listening area, and they're here for months. So I think that I don't know why this is the first one you've seen, but they're small, and even though they're bright and blue, when they get into the shrubs where they typically nest and sing, they can be very difficult to see because it's a little bitty bird. Even though he's blue, when the sun's not hitting it and he's in the shadows, he looks pretty dark, pretty black. You don't really see that blue with the naked eye. Of course, once you throw your binoculars up and you see it, then you'll see that blue. But to answer your question, they have been here longer than you and me. And so that bird is a very common nesting bird in this area. They like open woods. They like shrubby, scrubby areas. They like regenerating pine plantations, what people call clear cuts when they're growing back. And, you know, and they're short stature pines. They maybe look like envision a Christmas tree farm. They might look, the trees are like that. The indigo bunnings love that. And once you learn that song of the indigo bunning, and I drive down roads with my windows open, you just hear those all over the place. So they're I would call them abundant.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio. And we have Dave and Judy both in a holding pattern right now in flight. But we've got to go to Paul next from Shreveport. Paul, you're on the line with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
I had a couple of questions, if I may, about just hanging a hummingbird feeder. And a couple of questions I had was, do you think about 8 to 10 feet high beside the house is okay? Is it better in the shade?
Okay.
It's in the front yard. I have an oak tree and a magnolia in the back. Would it be better to hang it by a blossoming plant or tree?
Well, there are a couple things to think about when you hang it up. You don't want to hang it up too close to the window. If something on the other side spooks the bird, he's going to flee and he'll hit the window. So you want to have the window there to observe it, but you don't want it too close. You don't want to have that nectar in the hot sun just cooking and brewing either. So you want to make sure that it's in the shade for most or if not all day. That would make it easier for you for maintenance because you're going to have to change it a lot more because it's just going to get spoiled in that hot sun. And right now it's just hot and cooking. So I would say maybe a tree. Another thing to think about is don't put it too close to where a cat might be stalking, if that's a concern. It should be. The roadrunner foraging that the caller had earlier, that doesn't bother me as much. That's a native predator, but our pet cats, you don't want to hang that feeder where a pet cat can sit and make a meal out of those hummingbirds. So kind of think about all those things before you hang it up. Does that help?
Oh, we're getting ready to move on. But yeah, let us know if that helps. You can email us at rmoran@lsus.edu. And we have a couple of callers in a holding pattern right now. Judy and Joe, please stay on the line. We're going to go to Dave next from Nacogdoches. Dave, you're on the line with Cliff Shackelford. And what's your question tonight?
Thank you. And Cliff, glad to see you doing the program.
And I recognize your voice, Dave.
Here's an easy one for you. What's the easiest way to distinguish between the calls and songs of the vireos in this area?
Well, the easiest way, so we've got yellow-throated vireo, red-eyed vireo, wide-eyed vireo. Those are our three dominant ones. The wide-eyed vireo is going to be typically low. Like think of a basketball goal and all the way to the ground. That's typically where your white-eyed vireo is. He's in that shrub scrub layer, that understory layer. And he makes a very quick call. And then the red-eyed and the yellow-throated vireos, they're both way up in the canopy. And the colloquial name for red-eyed vireo is preacher bird, because they don't ever seem to be quiet. They just keep preaching away. And so the handle that we use for the red-eyed vireo, and handle means something you can grab hold of when you're describing a bird song. It sounds like he's saying, "Hey, you, over here. Where are you? I'm over here." So two or three notes with a pause. And then the yellow-throated vireo does something similar, but it's a little burry and buzzy. It's a little slower, too. So if with a little practice, you can tell those two apart. And I've heard many spots in East Texas where you are, where you can hear both singing from the same patch of woods. And with a little practice, you can tell those two apart. And there we also have scattered records of Bell's vireos. They're real distinctive, but they're so unusual in this area, I'm not even going to really mention that one.
Give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 if you have questions about birds, birding, ornithology. The show is Bird Calls. Our expert is Cliff Shackelford. He is the non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and he is online with us right now. And we're going to go to Judy from Pineville next. Judy, you are on the line with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Hi, Cliff. I'm so excited to find this program.
Great.
My husband and I have been amateur bird watching for several years. We set up a feeder, and of course, during the winter, I noticed these little brown birds with the dark bars on their wings, and I looked through my guide, and I thought, oh, they're Acadian flycatchers, and then I finally, after a couple of years, realized they're probably goldfinches in their winter plumage.
Yes.
And then this spring, for the first time, two of them turned into their breeding plumage. They turned into the gold.
Oh, yeah, the canary yellow. And that's really a treat, isn't it? Did you like that?
I loved it. And I was so happy to see it. I had never seen it before.
Yeah, it's neat to travel to points farther north where that's a breeding bird. They just don't breed in our listening area, but you don't have to go that far north. Latitude, like I've been in the Atlanta area, and that's a breeding bird there, and boy, are they just gorgeous. They're just canary yellow, and they're little, and they've got a beautiful voice, and they're such a treat. Unfortunately, they won't stay with us year round. So when you do see them, like you mentioned, they're pretty drab in the winter, but if you're lucky, one of those males will molt into his breeding plumage, but poof, he's gone. He's breeding farther to our north.
You can give us a call right now with your questions about birds, birding, anything ornithological at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. If you have a photograph of a bird you'd like Cliff to try to identify, you can email that photograph to rmoran@lsus.edu. That's rmoran@lsus.edu. We'll bring it in here and try to have Cliff go ahead and identify that. And then later we're going to actually post these photos on our website, so with the identification, so other folks can kind of check in. It's always nice to have those visual stimuli going on there. We had a caller call in and had them write down the question. They say they've been gone for 5 months and they came back and no hummingbirds were at the feeder, and they want to know, will the hummingbirds come back?
Yeah, we get that call a lot. People see them, see hummingbirds in migration, and they wonder if they're going to stick around. A lot of times they don't. The time of the year that we get the most hummingbirds in our listening area is going to be the fall. When those birds are heading south, they will stage here, and about the third, fourth week of September, or even before that, mid-September, we can get just bunches of them. So it's just hard to know whether or not that bird that you see passing through in April is going to stick around and breed. They really thin out numbers, and the best thing to do is just wait for September, and you'll see big numbers in our area. And that's when you really want to maintain your feeder. You want to look at the ratio and make sure you're putting out four parts water, one part sugar. You want to make sure you replace that, even if they don't drain it. Don't have the attitude of I'm not going to change it until they drink it all. It doesn't work that way. You want to replace that every 3 or 4 days, depending on how hot it is outside.
And a related question came in from Nacogdoches, and they wanted to know, are there actually fewer hummingbirds in this area right now?
We don't have any data to suggest that hummingbirds are declining. Actually, it's a pretty difficult group of birds to track, to monitor. What we do use are hummingbird sightings in urban areas, and those data don't suggest any really big declines. So I think as a whole, most of our hummingbirds are doing pretty well, and it's remarkable, you know, with how small they are, how far something like a rufous or ruby-throated hummingbird goes in migration. But they seem to be doing okay.
And we're going to reach all the way across the Mississippi for our next caller from Natchez, Mississippi. And Ed, you are on the line with Cliff Shackelford tonight. And what's your question?
This is a great show. I've never heard it before, and I'm enjoying it.
This is the first time we've ever been on the air with this show.
Well, no wonder. Look, I got a question about several of the birds that people have called in on, one of which I get 2 to 4 rose-breasted grosbeaks every year in the spring. So I got a question. I have never seen one in the fall once, and surely they have to go south to come back north.
They do. A lot of birds will do what's called elliptical migrations, and you'll see them in one season or another, but sometimes not both. And that's true for things like a lot of our thrushes. Actually, thrushes are maybe different. Those guys, we'll see them in the spring, and they just race through in the fall. I think we have less sightings in the fall, for probably because they're racing south, and also we just don't have a lot of people getting out in the hot fall to look for these birds. But it's true. When I see rose-breasted grosbeaks coming through here, they're thick in the spring, and I don't see them in the fall, and I don't know if that's because of effort, because I'm not out there, because it's too bloody hot, or if it's because they have more of an elliptical pattern where they're not going straight up and straight down through your same yard every time. So I don't know the answer to that.
All right. We're going to go to our next caller. You are listening, by the way, to Bird Calls. This is our inaugural program. We're going to do this quarterly here on Red River Radio. Our next show will be in September. We'll announce that at a later time. You can call us right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cliff Shackelford is our resident expert here tonight. He is the non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and he is an author of Hummingbirds of Texas, as well as numerous publications. And we're going to go next to Sam from Spring Hill. Sam, you have a question for Cliff tonight?
I do. I was wondering about the whippoorwills. Are they native to this area?
Is this a bird you're hearing right now this month outside? Because the reason I'm asking is we have two different nighttime birds that are closely related that sing loudly, and the one that we have that stays and breeds is the chuckwill's widow. And now if you're, I don't know where'd you say you're calling from?
Spring Hill.
Where is that?
Northern Webster Parish, right on the Arkansas state line.
Yeah, it's okay. Right northeast of
Cause,
us.
Because once you get into the Ouachita Mountains in Arkansas, you start picking up whippoorwills as a breeder. But I'm guessing that the bird you hear at night is chuckwill's widow. And they are very susceptible to fragmentation of our forest. For rural expansion, when you bring in a big, bright mercury vapor light, they don't work so well with that. They like the dark woods. They like big woods. And it's probably because the specific food they're after, and we really don't know what they're exactly after, is in those kind of conditions. So I'm guessing you've got chuckwill's widow, and they are here all through the summer, and they are fantastic to hear. If you want to hear whippoorwill and you're not in the breeding range, the way to do that one is they pour through our areas about the third or fourth week of March, And for a couple week window, they will sing right at dark. It's still a little bit of light, but once those trees stop looking green and they look black, that's that time of the night where whippoorwills will sing in migration. So the whips will go up to Ouachitas and the Ozarks to breed, but these are chuckwills widows.
And I'm going to assume that this is actually a chuckwills.
Yeah.
That was one that stumped me for a while, recording that I had made a couple of years ago. So that's a native to this area.
This we're listening to. Play it again. This is whippoorwill. So this is the one that I'm mentioning.
This is whippoorwill.
This is whippoorwill. And they're just incessant. They're nonstop. They're great unless you're maybe camping and they're right over your tent, which I've done that before. And woo, it's loud. But that is whippoorwill. And that's the one that I mentioned, in at least in my area or even Shreveport, they're going to be a migrant only, and it's going to be the latter part of March, early part of April, and they're going to sing like that right when it starts getting very dark.
All right. Give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 with your ornithological questions. We have two callers up right now. Jeff, please stay on the line. We're going to go to Ella next, and then we'll get to you. Ella from Nacogdoches, you are on the line with Cliff Shackelford. What's your question tonight?
Yes, I have a question. We travel from Nacogdoches to Mount Vernon, and we go by Lake Cypress Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of the corner of my eye, I saw a heron. I thought it was a heron, but I think it was a whooping crane because it had the black wingtips.
Yeah.
Could that be possible? Do you know of any sightings of them? I know that they're starting to migrate further east.
Well, more than likely it was a wood stork. The date would help. What time of the year you saw it? Because that area you're talking about is pretty much east of the whooping crane migration. Now, I should mention that there's an experimental population in Louisiana, and those birds are banded and well marked. And though there are some of those that have moved into north central Texas. They've been at Lake Ray Hubbard and Lake Louisville, I believe, and
yeah,
right now. Yeah, and so people are pretty excited about that, but they're man-made, in essence. But I'm guessing you had wood storks, and that is a bird that a lot of viewers will see in late spring sometimes, or really they peak in the dead hot of summer. So we really see a lot of them in late July, August, September. And they like drying ponds, stock tanks. They like shallow edges of big reservoirs. And they do look very whooping crane-ish because they're giant. They're white with black wingtips. Yeah. But I'm guessing you had a wood stork.
Well, thank you so much, because I was wondering about that.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, and we've got our next caller online. We're going to go to Jeff from Texarkana. First, I want to give out the numbers, 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502. If you have a photo you'd like us to identify, you can send it to rmoran@lsus.edu. That's rmoran@lsus.edu. Jeff from Texarkana, you're on the line with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Yes, hello. What a wonderful program.
Great. Thank you.
I have a water source in the backyard. I have a little water sprinkler thing that I use in the spring and summer primarily. And I saw a few weeks ago what looked exactly like a chestnut-sided warbler. I don't think that they're around here, and I think it was probably a different warbler. Can you give me an idea of one that might look like that?
Well, what was your date? Do you have an idea when that was?
It was probably... I would say the end of April, 1st of May.
It absolutely could have been a chestnut-sided warbler. Those birds pour through our area, and they will stop and take that gas station break. And you got lucky to see one. I've seen them in migration. They're not unusual to see. They're just tiny,
yes.
And you got to be lucky, and you got to be just right to see them. And I think you had a really good, nice treat. Was he in your backyard, you said?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's good.
One day I had a red-breasted grosbeak, a gray catbird, a Blackburnian warbler,
wow,
white-eyed vireo, and a pine siskin, and a male female summer tanagers. In
wow,
one day.
That's great. Well, I'm hoping you keep a yard list. My wife and I do that. We have a big sheet of paper on the on one of the cupboards in the kitchen, and we make sure we keep tabs of. It's just for fun. There's no science behind it, but it sounds like you got us beat. You've got several warblers we don't have. Well, I don't. I have to take that back. We have had both black, birdie, and chestnut sided, but those are very good treats. And if people want to see those birds, they really peak in the last week of April, first week of May, somewhere in there. And if there's a nighttime storm, a blue norther, that knocks them down, and they can't fly through that, just like an airplane can't fly through that kind of storm. And the thing to do as a bird watcher is to get out that next morning and go find a woodlot where you think you might have some grounded migrants. And that can be your backyard. It sounds like you had maybe a little grounding event. And that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Well,
very cool.
A lot. Great program.
Thank you.
You are listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford, and we have time for one, maybe two more callers. We got James from New Iberia. James, you are on the line with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
All right, sir. We have a bird feeder that the sparrows keep a lot of seed kicked out on the ground. And the other day I was watching, and it was two female cardinals and a male. And they were down on the ground. They were about maybe within a 3 or 4 or 5 inches of each other. And he would dig around and get a seed, and this particular female would squat down like she was all hurting, and he would put that seed in her beak.
Yes.
And he would just continuously do that. What's going on there?
Well, I bet you what you saw was a first-year bird, and the way to tell that that's a young cardinal that he was feeding is she has a black bill, a very dark gray to black bill. The wife, the female, will have an orangey bill. So I imagine what you saw was husband, wife, and kid. And so he was feeding the kid, is what I'm suspecting.
Okay. Yeah.
So she that female looks just like, or I'm sorry, that young bird, the feathering, the color looked just like the female. She already has the crest, but look carefully at the bill. It'll be dark gray to black, and that means that bird was just born in the last few months.
All right, I've got one final question, and that is this March and this April, this is what I was hearing at 3 a.m. outside my window. Now, I know that's a mockingbird. What is the particular dilemma of this mockingbird at that time at night in that season?
Well, and we get a lot of people that are pretty upset when they, you know, when it's 58 degrees outside and you want to have those windows open and cuddle up under the blanket and sleep really nice, get that fresh air. Well, there's that mockingbird, and he's singing at that all night long. And what we found is that those are unmated males. And so they're kind of in hyperdrive trying to get that girlfriend. And so they're burning that midnight oil singing through the night. So more than likely that's an unmated male that is looking for a girlfriend.
So we need to go ahead and get that that boy a date.
Yeah,
You have been listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford here on Red River Radio. Our next call-in program on this subject matter will be in September, and our next program of What's Bugging You will be in August. We'll get you the dates later on as we settle those in. We hope you'll call in at that time with your questions. We do encourage people, if you have the opportunity and chance, take photographs of the birds and record the bird sounds that you hear. Send those to us, and we'll have those all ready for the next show. It's a great way not only to collect up some beautiful sounds and background information, but also to do some fun photography and explore your ornithological world. Cliff, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. It's been a pleasure. You have been listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford right here on Red River Radio. And our producers tonight were Renee Moran and Bill Beckett. Wally Derleth, Daniel Gordy, and Henry Edwards were helping us on the phones. The audio for this program tonight will be posted on our website in just a few hours. And you can re-listen to this program again at redriverradio.org. You are listening to Red River Radio, and we are your public broadcasting service from LSUS. Fresh Air is coming up next. Thank you.